SCP-8980, Ergophobia, Without Regards, Part 1. In a perfect universe, or even a semi-perfect universe, workplaces would be locations where groups of like-minded individuals could come together to be more than the sum of their parts. Things would run smoothly, problems would be minimal, and people would get along with one another without any sort of messy emotions disrupting the job. Unfortunately, we live in a universe a long ways away from perfect, and even the SCP Foundation is often mired in human problems. SCP-8980 is an article about a very unfortunate Foundation employee who suddenly manifests some anomalous properties. Her subsequent containment turns out to be a far cry from ethical, mostly due to her particularly malicious containment overseer. I'll put a warning here, although it's going to be more applicable in Part 2, that this article contains explicit misogyny, prolonged psychological abuse, severe psychological trauma, gaslighting, violence, neglect, and other sensitive topics. With that warning in mind, let's take a look. We're first given a notice that this is an Ethics Committee case file, which is currently undergoing active investigation for violation of the Foundation's Code of Conduct. Information contained in this file may not accurately reflect reality, and it should not be considered a reliable source. As such, the document has been annotated by a panel of Ethics Committee review specialists for inaccurate or misleading information, and I'll try to point out these annotations when relevant. SCP-8980 is Lillian Marley, a 28-year-old human female born in San Francisco. It's noted that Lillian was 28 at time of containment, but is now 40, and she was a Level 3 containment specialist employed by the Foundation. She quickly became a prominent member of junior staff due to her work ethic, conscientious attitude, and accomplishments, achieving her Level 3 credentials a year before she began to manifest anomalous properties in 2005. Lillian's anomalous capabilities activate when utilizing electronic software, as whenever she produces, edits, deletes, or otherwise interacts, even indirectly, with digital information, the info is modified in some way that negatively affects her, whether socially, financially, or psychologically. Examples of this phenomenon include critical files deleting themselves randomly from devices owned by her, words in files changing into similar, inappropriate words, such as "I like you" becoming "I lick you," electronic communication being sent to incorrect addresses, often resulting in data breaches or confusion, important programs initiated by her engaging in undefined behavior even if impossible, such as throwing segmentation faults despite being memory safe, electronic payments intended for her being routed to incorrect recipients or failing to send under automated systems, and electronic devices randomly shutting down in close proximity to her, especially when owned by other individuals. The exact source of her anomaly is unclear and is subject to ongoing research. Lillian was first discovered to be anomalous in February of 2005 during a routine team meeting. She had attempted to display a graph demonstrating a comparison between two algorithms, but instead the projector began to display highly explicit content. This resulted in Human Resources penalizing her by requiring an audit of her personal devices every 2 weeks and reducing her pay, despite her protests that her device never contained such material and that it was not due to any fault of her own. Over the coming weeks, she began to report significant issues with her devices and assigned SCIPnet account, mentioning random deletion of files, modification of interpersonal communication in a way that negatively affected her, and random shutdowns of nearby electronics owned by her coworkers. Replacement of her devices, recreation of her accounts, and even temporary relocation and isolation of her physical self failed to prevent these anomalies from occurring. After deliberation, Site-17's Containment Oversight Committee, with advisory from Dr. Christopher Burns' research group, determined that the best course of action was to reclassify Lillian as an anomaly, citing concerns over property damage or potential loss of life. She hesitantly agreed to undergo temporary containment until anomalous properties ceased. Following her containment, head researcher Burns conducted a series of interviews to understand the scope and severity of her anomalous properties. Sitting down in her standard humanoid containment unit, Burns apologizes for these unfortunate circumstances, calling her Lillian. She interrupts him to say that he's not following the standard procedure, as he should refer to her informal interviews as SCP-8980. Burns clears his throat and agrees with her, saying that being forced to undergo these inane procedures must be quite troublesome for someone like her. She just shrugs and says that it's fine, as she's hoping that they'll get this resolved within a week or two. He continues by asking her her name, age, occupation, and for her to describe the circumstances in which she discovered her anomalous properties. She pauses, asking if that's necessary, as he could just put all of the details in the file directly. Burns smirks, mentioning the proper procedure, and she acquiesces, stating that she was in the middle of a presentation when the projector suddenly began to display sexually explicit material to the staff present, none of which was actually on her hard drive. Burns says that normally that would be classified as an anomalous event, but presumably further incidents occurred. She scowls, remarking that he's her boss, so he should already know the rest of the story. He wants it on the record, however, so she continues, stating that she began to experience repeated instances of malfunctions in software she was near, including important files getting deleted, emails being sent to the wrong addresses, and her coworkers' computers shutting down randomly. She asks if they've determined the anomaly's grade yet, meaning the classification of how it operates, but Burns says that they're running some Hume tests at the moment, and then they'll try looking at Elon Vital Energy. Lillian scoffs, as those tests never work, but Burns says that he's nothing if not thorough, like she always tells him. She tells him to just try and get the tests done as quickly as possible, as she's only spent an hour in here and she's already antsy. Burns smiles before stating that standard protocol forbids them from giving her a computer, but he'll arrange for some light reading for her, taken from the lounge or something. She smiles back, saying that it would be appreciated, and the two shake hands as the interview concludes. Burns notes that 8980 is cooperative in containment, and he has provided it with basic reading materials for the coming days of testing, which will proceed using both blood samples and physical examination. During the following week, several tests were carried out on her, with them all showing her to be utterly ordinary. Burns joins her for another interview, with her appearing to be visibly agitated. Burns arrives late, with the excuse that traffic delayed his other work, but she impatiently asks for the results. She's been stuck in a cell for the past week, getting her blood drawn and being put through the ringer, so she had hoped at the very least that he'd give her the luxury of being on time. Burns shakes his head, stating that she can be a real ball buster sometimes, before retrieving some documents from his briefcase. He says that unfortunately, it seems like all the standard tests came back null, indicating that her anomaly isn't pseudo-explainable. They haven't been able to figure out any concrete rules yet, but they can at least determine the anomaly isn't inexplicable. She looks over a document of the test results, saying that she can definitely see some correlations in the data here, and Burns tells her that they have been able to establish one likely through line for all the past incidents. He clears his throat and says that it seems like the anomaly is trying to humiliate her. He slides her another document, saying that every instance of 8980 changing text has been to her social detriment. Every document it's deleted has been when she absolutely needed it for work. Every email that's been sent to the wrong address has caused some breach of sensitive information, calling into question her cognitive stability. And every device that shut down was in the middle of a critical operation while she was nearby. He asks if she's religious by any chance, which surprises her. But after a moment, she says that no, she hasn't been religious since she was 15. Burns tells her that their first suspect then is targeted divine punishment from an Akiva-based entity, or an esophysical attachment of some kind. He can get the relevant departments to run some tests on their behalf. She thanks him before pausing again, and says that she assumes he'll also want more data points from her. Burns smiles and says that she's always had a pretty good head on her shoulders. They'll want to be absolutely sure that there's no underlying pattern by conducting a few experiments with her, which will at least give her something to do while they figure out this whole situation. Lillian replies that that will add at least another 2 weeks onto her containment, and she can't do that. Burns sighs and says that he doesn't think that there's much choice. They can't have her inadvertently ruining critical software in the site, especially with some of the nightmares they lock up here. She's just going to have to put up with it for a while, and if it helps, they've already reassigned the project she was on, so she can just consider this an extended vacation. She sighs loudly and agrees, but says that he better make sure that she's credited for the parts she already did. While Burns assures her that he will, it's noted that the paper only credited Lillian in the acknowledgments, alongside the rest of the research team. And while this was a violation of the Foundation's citation policy, it was determined that too much time had passed to punish the sole author credited. Burns ends the interview by cheerfully stating that they'll proceed with the second phase of testing, and he'll be on time. He notes that he'll be reaching out to various other departments to try and approach the anomaly from unique vectors. He'll try to allocate some funding for this project, and hopefully more data will give them some more correlations. We're given an abridged list of the experimentation logs, which were conducted over a period of 5 days. In the first test, Lillian is given a standard Dell brand laptop with Windows 95 installed on it. Very little occurred initially, but when attempting to play Minesweeper after an hour, Lillian consistently triggered a bomb on the first guess for over 58 games in a row, which is impossible on non-anomalous versions of Windows 95. Lillian ended up closing the laptop in anger, and Burns notes that it's possible the anomaly places her into situations which will cause her to react with frustration or anger. In a second experiment, Lillian was provided with a Dell brand desktop computer running Netlog, a Foundation operating system. She was instructed to solve 100 geometry math problems on the device, with certain modifications made to the software to obfuscate and frustrate her in order to test whether frustrations would prevent the anomaly from activating. She initially reported mixed success, though she frequently bumped into software obfuscation that frustrated her endeavors. Researchers noted that values in the software had begun to change slightly while she solved them, resulting in consistently incorrect results, which were not part of the programmed obfuscation tactics. The test was aborted after she refused to continue due to a migraine, and Burns notes that her anomalous properties activated quite insidiously here, as it took them nearly 20 minutes before they even noticed the values changing. It seems the anomaly isn't content with allowing situations to play out naturally, and it could be affecting things on a much more minute scale than they thought. In another test, Lillian was provided with her work computer and was allowed to use it for up to an hour in private in order to test whether the anomaly activated without outside observers. She ended up aborting the test 25 minutes in, showing distress. She did not yield to questioning on the nature of this event, and requested the experiment not be conducted again. While testimony did corroborate the existence of the experiment and the described interview, no video recording could be found in the Deepwell archives. Comments from a Dr. Rachel Steele state that even though they're not aware of the specifics of what occurred during this test, it's still apparent that the anomaly activates in isolation with Lillian. The next line of inquiry should be to see whether or not her anomaly activates with other electronic devices besides personal computers. The Ethics Committee review notes that Steele was another member of the 8980 containment team, but interviews conducted with Steele revealed that she had next to no involvement with 8980's actual containment beyond initial testing. It's the general consensus of the Ethics Committee that this general lack of involvement was gross negligence on part of Steele concerning the circumstances surrounding 8980's later containment, and as a result is in direct violation of the Foundation's code of conduct. In another test, Lillian was brought to a temporary testing chamber with essential commodities and was provided with a 27-inch LCD television set connected to cable. She watched various educational documentaries throughout the test, interspersed by an attending researcher entering the room to check on the test's status. After 7.5 hours, approaching the 8-hour allotted duration for the experiment, the television suddenly switched to playing The Wiggles Show, moments before an attending researcher entered the room. The device would then not respond to external input until Lillian was removed from the premises. Burns notes that it seems that Lillian's anomaly has some form of foresight or intelligence behind it, though they haven't been able to figure out who or what it is. The review specialists comment that there are numerous reasons for why an anomaly may display rationalistic behaviors similar to sapiens without being sentient, and as a containment specialist, Burns should have been aware of this. While this was going on, several more tests were run on organic samples from Lillian, which ruled out several more explanations for the anomaly's presence. Another interview was held between Burns and Lillian, roughly 3 weeks after her initial containment. Burns once again arrives late, but Lillian curiously doesn't comment on it this time, which is noted by the review specialists as being unusual. Burns tells her that he doesn't have the best of news, and slides her a document. Pretty much every major test they've run has returned a negative or unlikely result, and in essence, it seems that she's a unique, pattern-based anomaly. Lillian begins swearing and slams her fists onto the table, despite Burns telling her to remain calm and stating that she's acting irrational again. She'll just need to continue testing for a few more months so they can learn to mitigate her anomalous effects. Lillian scoffs, asking if she's just supposed to rot away in this chamber all day while she waits for her co-workers to finish poking and prodding her with sticks. Burns replies that he's sure they can arrange some form of entertainment for her in the interim, but she angrily retorts that she doesn't want entertainment. She just wants to work on her projects and do something for the world instead of watching The Wiggles all day. Burns sighs, saying that he figured this would be hard to break to her, but the best thing she can do for them is to remain in containment and help them study her. Once everything's all done and settled down, and they figured out what's wrong with her, they'll let her come back out and she can help them with her projects or studies or whatever. Lillian replies that she never said she wanted to help him, causing Burns to flinch, and counter that it's not like she's been helping him all that much anyways. Lillian scoffs again, and the two sit in silence for 10 seconds. Eventually, she says that she'll give them 1 month, and after that, she revokes her consent to containment. Burns replies that she can't revoke her consent to containment, but she states that she knows her rights. Burns just laughs, but Lillian doesn't. He says that he's got it, 1 month, and they'll try to have it all sorted out by then. Lillian sighs and leans back in her chair, asking if that's everything then. Burns says that it is, and she thanks God. Burns then stands, reaching out for a handshake, with Lillian hesitating for a moment before reciprocating. Burns notes that telling Lillian the bad news on how containment as an anomaly works will certainly be awkward, so it would be preferable if they can find a way to at least mitigate the anomaly's effects in the next month. They'll need to borrow a few members of their other division teams to help expedite some of these tests, but What shouldn't they do for one of their own? In order to best reintegrate Lillian into the Foundation's employment structure, various tests were conducted to determine how to best accommodate her anomalous properties in the workplace. In one test, she was driven to a remote location with no connection to the electrical grid or internet, and was provided with a fully charged, brand new laptop running Windows 95. She proceeded to experience significant difficulty setting the system up, including high input latency, incorrect options being selected, and the device randomly restarting. While she was able to eventually set it up, it was cited as being uncomfortable, and she requested to conclude the experiment. Burns comments that this does seem to confirm that 8980 is the source of the anomaly, as opposed to just its subject. Isolation isn't able to fully prevent its effects, but it does isolate any corruption to the device itself. In another test, Lillian used a Foundation standard desktop computer within a Class 2 Faraday room, a room lined with a Faraday cage to prevent electromagnetic radiation from interfering with internal electronics. The Ethics Committee review specialists note that it's unclear as to why Burns included this experiment, as there was no reason to suspect that it would have any effect. Sure enough, the test results were the same as before, and Burns notes that this rules out the possibility of electromagnetic interference, or something of the sort. In another test, Lillian was placed in a room with several electronic devices, including mobile cell phones, television sets, and desktops, and was instructed to use one such device for 25 minutes for any purpose. She selected and used a BlackBerry cell phone for several minutes, with the device prevented from sending outgoing electronic communication, so she played a game. This lasted for several minutes until the device suddenly froze and began to send an outgoing call to a man named Michael Crawford, who had gone to the same college as her. The man picked up, and after Lillian learned his identity, she attempted to hang up the call, but the device refused to cooperate. The two engaged in a heated debate regarding a nebulous topic for nearly 15 minutes before she smashed the phone and halted the experiment. Burns notes that filling her surroundings with electronics to dilute her anomalous effects doesn't seem to make a difference. The anomaly appears to be laser-targeted to cause as much damage to her psyche as it can, though its limits haven't been clearly identified. The incident regarding Michael Crawford was interesting, as their relationship appears to have been one-sided, with him knowing more about her than she knows about him. Details are limited on both sides, however, and he doesn't have any connections to any known groups of interest, and possesses little to no sub-veil knowledge. Just to be sure, though, they amnesticized him. Lillian has shown heavy reluctance to participate in future experimentation, but he's assured her that they're getting closer to a permanent solution. She'll just need a few days to get her emotions in control. In yet another test, Lillian was taken to a retrofitted containment chamber and was provided with multiple stacks of Foundation standard lined paper, as well as several writing instruments. She was instructed to write several short programs on the paper in the programming language C, and output the finished product into a slot on the wall. The paper would then be interpreted by a remote system, which would then print the requested debugging/output information and return it to Lillian. No noted effects of her anomaly were observed during this process. Burns notes that this seems like a clear and functional way for her to continue her duties to the Foundation. While he's sure that it's a large reduction in quality compared to a machine, she's likely at least a little relieved that she has a future at this organization. He's sure that he speaks for all of them in the research team when he says that he looks forward to having her back with them. Following several days, standardizing her containment arrangement, she began to resume active employment at the Foundation on April 18, 2005, with special consideration for her anomalous capabilities. Her designation was not lifted, however, due to her potential risk to nearby electronic equipment. For the first few days following her accommodations being standardized, Lillian showed signs of struggling, but she quickly achieved similar efficiency within a week of acclimation, despite the limitations. She also showed some signs of improved emotional stability during this period. After several weeks of concurrent containment and employment, however, she began to show signs of irritation and lack of cooperation, and Burns scheduled an interview with her to identify the source of the issue. Lillian sits motionless at the interviewing table, and although the text describes her looking irritated, the specialist corrects it to say the look is more clearly anxious. Burns arrives at the chamber, but Lillian doesn't greet him. He tells her that her performance recently has been showing some negative trends, and the division director is a bit pissy. Things seem to be quite fine for the past few weeks, so he's curious as to why her work ethic suddenly took a nosedive. Lillian replies that she wants out. She's been stuck in this cell for 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, with little to no freedom for over a month now. During work hours, she's entirely alone when not on break. The silence is deafening, and she's exhausted. They've had a system here for her continued employment despite anomalous interference, but she wants to talk to her friends again, and her parents. She knows that he knows that she doesn't get along with them, but she hasn't seen or spoken with them in over a month, and she misses them. Burns scratches his chin and says that she does get 8 hours of socialization in supervised areas. Just because she can't enter sensitive areas anymore doesn't mean that she's imprisoned here. It's not like she's the most social person anyway, as she barely talked to her team outside of work. Lillian just grunts and says that she'd really rather have human interactions that aren't being supervised, and she repeats that she wants to see her parents again. She wants out of containment, and ideally to go back to working at a computer, regardless of the consequences. Burns begins to argue that she's anomalous, but Lillian interrupts him, saying that she knows, but there are anomalies employed by the Foundation, and most of them don't have to put up with so much of this bullshit. She feels like a prisoner here. Burns counters that her circumstances are unique, and they can't let her wander around, possibly wreaking havoc on the Foundation's security or normalcy. One malfunction in a random critical component could cost them lives, and she should be grateful that the Foundation lets her out of this cell at all. She's a massive liability for them, for the Foundation as a whole. The specialists note that Foundation humanoid containment policy requires at least 8 hours of available socialization opportunities per day, excluding hostile or extremely dangerous entities, so Burns' comment about her not being let out of her cell was inappropriate to make. Lillian shifts uncomfortably and hesitates, before saying that, truth be told, she doesn't really care. This isn't normal, and she never agreed to this. Burns replies that the Foundation often does things to people that they don't agree with, and she of all people should know that. Lillian comments on his lack of tact, but he just says that it's the truth, and frankly, this has been an awfully draining experience. Adding another anomaly to his duties and subtracting an employee from his roster has been packing his team with endless issues, and her newfound non-compliance has been a real pain in the ass. She sarcastically feigns sympathy for him, and the two sit in silence for 12 seconds. Eventually, Lillian says that she's going to file a request for reassessment if she has to, a type of form anomalies can file to request a reassessment of their containment procedures. She's not going to sit here for another month writing code on a piece of paper all day. Burns just shrugs and tells her to go ahead, as he's not allowed to stop her. She knows that he's right, though, that she's a liability to normalcy, and the directors know that too. They're not going to do much else differently than him, if anything. He comments that maybe they can do another round of testing and possibly meet another one of her college exes. She grimaces in response and says that maybe she can ask them to change who she's assigned to, so at least her social interaction of the month isn't with a piece of shit like him. Burns scowls and says that he'll just assume it's her time of the month and pretend he didn't hear that, so that they can keep some level of professionalism between them. The specialists note that this form of vernacular is not appropriate in a workplace environment and should not have been used by Burns. Lillian replies that since they're already in the business of pretending they didn't hear things, but this segment of the recording was not explicitly transcribed. Due to the potentially sensitive nature of the comment, alongside its conspicuous absence from the transcription, it's clear that Burns intentionally excluded it for unknown reasons, with purposeful modification of Foundation transcripts being in direct violation of the Foundation Code of Conduct. Burns grunts in response, and the two sit in silence for nearly 20 seconds, until Lillian eventually sighs and stands up, telling him that they're done here. He knows what she wants, and if he's going to obstruct her again, she'll just go around him. She's tired of staring at his ugly mug, and she'd be happy to get her case off of his hands. Burns tells her to file her request for reassessment, and he'll see her again at their next interview. Lillian opens her mouth to reply, but decides against it, and leaves the chamber. Burns spends several minutes in the room in silence before muttering a swear and turning off the recording. 4 hours after the interview, Lillian requested and submitted a request for reassessment form to the Site-17 Containment Oversight Committee. The document has been reproduced for transparency purposes, but the Ethics Committee specialists agree that the document did not need to be displayed in full instead of just a summary. The publication of confidential information on public-facing SCP files is prohibited unless explicitly necessary to provide context, so the purpose of its inclusion here is presumed to be for ulterior motives. In this instance, Burns was in direct violation of the Foundation's Code of Conduct policy. The document shows her full name, her date of birth, her marital status, and her purpose for filing. She states that she's largely dissatisfied with how her ongoing containment has been handled by her current containment staff. As a former non-anomalous member of Foundation staff who has worked closely with containment specialists in the past, she is of the opinion that she is being deprived of certain rights and subject to improper containment, including a severe lack of visitation rights from family members, a major failure in private rights, especially during socialization, a lack of sufficient entertainment/stimulation, verbal abuse from Burns, and a failure to obtain consent for permanent containment. Due to these factors, she is requesting direct intervention from the Containment Oversight Committee to reassess her current containment procedures, and whether Burns is most fit to handle her case. She is hoping that these issues can be settled without further issue. Burns fills out the remainder of the document as her primary containment specialist. He admits that SCP-8980 is an exceedingly difficult anomaly to work on for him, as researcher Marley was a close associate of his throughout her tenure in their department, and despite their differences, they worked quite well as a team. To see her have to suffer through this anomaly has been painful for all of them, her especially, and this situation has brought out quite a lot of negative emotions in all of them. Nonetheless, it is his professional opinion that they've been doing all they are able to for her comfort and productivity. Her anomalous effects, while innocuous at first glance, could have catastrophic consequences should it interfere with a major electronic component at the site. For this reason, they've had to take extra precaution regarding who she interacts with, both for her safety and for theirs. This is also why her provisional containment has been extended. He admits that he has been less than professional in his past interviews with her, but he recognizes now that this situation has begun to escalate, and based on his past counseling, he would like to try and show this committee that he is fully capable of fixing his mistakes and maintaining a healthy and productive relationship with her in the future. If necessary, he will begin remedial therapy to address his mistakes and work towards a better future for himself and others. After 3 weeks of deliberation, the Containment Oversight Committee replied to the request, with the reply also being provided for us, despite being another violation of privacy. The committee thanks her continued efforts to help make the SCP Foundation a more ethical and responsible organization. Following intense deliberation, they have decided to respond to each of her points independently in order to ensure they adequately meet her expectations. For the lack of visitation rights from family members, they cite the Ethics Committee Code of Conduct, which states that an anomaly may be denied visitation rights if the transportation of any involved persons could cause significant and/or highly likely damage to either normalcy or monetary/personnel resources of the Foundation. It's the committee's opinion that a lack of visitation rights for someone with her anomalous effects was within the guidelines set out by the Ethics Committee, as they so intended. For the failure in privacy rights, especially during socialization, the committee believes that Burns is not infringing on her right to privacy, and while several accommodations can and will be made for her future containment, such as a provisional guarantee to private, one-on-one conversations, she still maintains an overall right to privacy with stipulations to accommodate her anomalous properties. As for a lack of sufficient entertainment/stimulation, her containment staff will be provided with a $50 monthly allocated budget for purchasing recreational material at her request. Speaking about verbal abuse from Burns, they state that they have found several comments made by him to have indeed been inappropriate for a professional environment. They have reprimanded him on his comments and have scheduled him for 3 months of remedial therapy, concurrent with his oversight of her anomaly. Lastly, as for the failure to obtain her consent for permanent containment, they simply state that, according to the Foundation Employee Handbook, consent is not a requirement for her containment. They hope that these points help alleviate her concerns regarding her continued containment here at the SCP Foundation, and if she has any further questions or concerns, to reach out to the Site 17 Local Ethics Committee liaison. It's noted that, at this time, this role was unfilled, and would eventually be filled 6 years later by liaison Marinos. So far, we have an article that's mostly about how unfortunate it is to be a sapient anomaly in the SCP universe, especially someone that has worked for the Foundation for years. It's essentially like being locked away in prison on a life sentence, except that most anomalies didn't even do anything wrong. There's no doubt that Lillian would probably prefer to just be amnesticized and sent home to live in a relatively peaceful life, with some occasional tech mishaps. She'd probably even prefer just living in a cabin in the wilderness somewhere. Unfortunately, the Foundation doesn't always operate like that. And in this case, as we'll see in part 2, Lillian's misery is only beginning. While Burns so far only seems somewhat condescending and misogynistic, things really take a turn for the worse.